From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. As we all know, over the last few years, COVID-19 has kind of put a damper on live events, from concerts to festivals, even to book launches. And while virtual get-togethers were fun, they're just not quite the same. That's why The Cabin is holding a belated book launch party, celebrating local authors who published their books during the pandemic. So joining us today to talk more about this upcoming event, as well as their books, are novelist and screenwriter Samantha Silva, journalist Kim Cross, and award-winning poet Emily Patinos. I want to welcome all of you to the program.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, great to be here.
So being a published author, I would assume, is no easy feat, let alone during a worldwide pandemic. So can you share with our listeners what made the process different than expected? And Samantha, let's start with you.
Well, the actual pandemic, I have to say, ironically, was useful to me. I'd had a hard time finishing the novel Love and Fury about Mary Wollstonecraft. And I really put my head down, sat at my own dining room table and put my head down and was able to focus. I think normally I use the news as a distraction, the news of the world as a distraction from whatever I'm writing. And during the pandemic, the book actually became a distraction from the news. And so that allowed me to finish it. The hard part, of course, was launching a book during the pandemic, where you can't connect with readers face-to-face, person-to-person. And that was challenging. I know it was challenging for all of us.
And Kim, your thoughts on that? How did the pandemic impact you and your process?
Well, to be honest, you know, I'm a full-time freelance writer, and my life didn't change all that much. And I also kind of found it kind of a wonderful focusing agent, where a lot of things fell off my calendar, and it gave me a lot of time to just dig in and focus and write. So I was lucky that I made my reporting trips right before the pandemic hit. And then when it was time to put sentences on paper, I found it kind of a wonderful ensconcement of just me and my family and my book.
And Emily, how about you? Same question.
I was also lucky to do some writing at the beginning of the pandemic, but I also had the challenge of teaching at the time as well. So I was also teaching over Zoom, and I received the news about my book being accepted for publication during that time too. So it was certainly complex.
Yeah, to say the least, right? Well, and then publishing a book is often accompanied by, you know, press releases, by a launch tour. What was it like when you couldn't have that in-person experience? I mean, Samantha, what was that like for you?
Well, I would say actually for the publishing industry in general, the virtual launches and book tours ended up being in some ways a great thing because authors and books could reach such, you know, wider audiences. But I also think that over time, people got burned out on doing everything virtually. You know, they were living online and they really wanted the personal contact. And I think that's what we gave up. When you can be in a room with readers talking about, you know, your concerns, why you wrote the book, what they care about, why it appeals to them, what's important in their lives. You know, that's where the magic happens, I think, in so many ways. And it's hard not to have that during a pandemic.
Mm-hmm. And Kim, for you as a freelance journalist, freelance writer, what was that like as well when all of a sudden, I mean, here you're out traveling, you're telling these stories and everything stops. And then when it even comes to a publication, I mean, you can't be face-to-face with people.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, it's always so much better to be face-to-face. I absolutely love meeting readers and engaging. And the book tour is really the fun part, where after months and months and months or even years of working alone in a room and wondering if it's any good, you get to talk to people. I feel like with the Stahlhaus, we were really lucky in that the pandemic affected the publication of the book. It turns out that there was a paper shortage in China where the book was printed. And so the publication date got delayed twice, from the spring to the summer to the fall of last year. And when it finally came out in November, we had already actually planned a big launch event in Boise in October. And we were able to pull it off with masks and COVID policies, but we had about 100 people in the Boise Contemporary Theater. And we had, kind of this wonderful hour-long presentation followed by a signing outside. And so we were able to make that work. And then in November, we had a very small select launch party at the Stallhouse itself in Los Angeles. And by then, the masking mandates had been lifted, so it felt almost normal for a minute. And then, of course, things continued to change. So I would say we got kind of lucky in our timing, in that the delay due to COVID of the publication actually helped with the events themselves.
So all three of you have been invited to participate in a belated book launch party. What are you looking forward to the most, Emily, about being able to, have this belated launch of your book?
Oh my gosh. I mean, The Last Unkillable Thing, which is my collection of poetry, as my first book ever, so I can't say that I had much to compare it to before. But when I had received the news that I'd won the Iowa Poetry Prize, which is a pretty old and major prize in contemporary poetry, at first I was, of course, stunned. And then I thought, wait, how is this going to work? Because I had never done a book tour before, and it was something that I was looking forward to in my publishing future. So it took a little adjustment, and I did a lot of online events, and actually some in-person events down the line, like through Storyfort in Boise. But having this book launch is going to be really wonderful. I think it's going to be nice to be with the community here and see kind faces and share the work.
Mm-hmm. You're all local to the Boise area. And so, Samantha, I'm curious, how does it feel to be recognized and celebrated for your achievements by your own local community?
Well, it's always rewarding and gratifying to be recognized locally. And I have to say, Rediscovered Books has been so good to all of us, and so good to so many local authors. And we're can't help but be grateful for their support. And the cabin as well. I'm really happy to see the cabin, reach out into the community and help local authors as well. Again, I think that the wonderful thing about the book launch, in addition to be able to connect with readers, potential readers, or people who've already read our books, is that we get to hang out with each other. And I think that's, that's another problem being a writer. You're isolated anyway, as Kim said, but especially isolated during the pandemic from each other. And I think not having a writing community and really being alone in that way it certainly has exacerbated my own introversion. And I've become perfectly happy to sit at my dining room table and think my own little thoughts. But I really miss talking to writers and figuring out what they're working on, what they're interested in, what's up next, what are their obsessions at any moment. And there's only so much of that you can do for yourself. So I'm really looking forward, not just to being with readers and people who care about our subjects, but with each other, being able to meet and talk with each other.
And we should note that the belated book launch party is tomorrow, Wednesday, from 7 to 9 p.m. It'll be at Lost Grove Brewing in Boise for anyone who wants to attend. And Kim, you during this event, you'll each be able to read a sample from your novels and, share that experience with those who are in attendance. What's it like to be in person in a group of people reading an excerpt from your book versus, being online? I mean, yes, we've all had to adapt, but there is something about the energy when you're, in a crowd with an audience.
Oh, it's so different. And I just love, just, yeah, the energy of the crowd. You can kind of sense the reactions and the emotions of people as they're reacting to your reading. And it's so fun because whenever someone is audibly or visibly moved by something that you write, I mean, that's the big reward for me as an author. So I think it's going to be really a lot of fun. And I look forward to hearing Emily and Samantha read and look forward to meeting them. It's just such a cool thing to have this literary community in Boise with Cabin and Rediscovered supporting us. It's really awesome.
Yeah. And the book launch, here's what I love. This book launch is open to the public and it's on a donation only basis. And Emily, I'm curious, how important is it for you as a local author to participate in these events and these culturally enriching events that allow access for everyone?
Oh, I think it's so incredibly important to be able to have students attend, people from the community attend. I mean, especially I think as a poet, going to poetry readings isn't, you know, a major part of our culture at the moment, but I think that once people attend, they have a good time and are moved. And I think that that is something that can appeal to so many more people than even realized.
Yeah. So Samantha, your novel, Love and Fury, is an imaginative retelling of the life of Mary Wollstonecraft. Can you tell us a little bit more about the book?
Sure. So, you know, everyone knows Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, but very, very few people really know who Mary Wollstonecraft was. She was a, you know, 18th century, really important writer and philosopher who basically is one of the early people arguing that men and women are equal in heart and mind and soul, and that women should have equal the same opportunities as men do in education and really all facets of life. She's a radical for her time, a rebel, but she's really not very well known. There are reasons for that, but the conceit of the novel is that she gives birth in 1797 to the baby who will grow up to be Mary Shelley. And because a doctor sticks his dirty hand in her womb, she dies 11 days later of puerperal fever, tragically at the age of 38. And so the conceit is really, if you had 11 days to tell the story of your life to your newborn daughter, what stories would you tell? And in each of those 11 days, she tells a story from her life. So it's really about sort of trying to encapsulate this extraordinary life. People call her the mother of feminism, but the way I think of it is that she didn't consider herself a feminist because it didn't exist then as an idea or as a word, but she invents the life. She really lives her whole life engaged with these ideas that we're still engaged with now, which I think is kind of stunning. And I think that Mary Wollstonecraft needs to be widely known, and she's as important now as she ever has been. We need her walking beside us. So I hope the novel brings her to life, sort of flesh, blood, fury, want, hope, despair, everything that made her life and everything that can still inspire us to fight for women's equality.
And you know, you bring up, I mean, Samantha, just, I mean, what an important historical figure for people to know. But even more so right now with where we are in the United States, why is it so important that we don't forget about people like Mary?
Well, it's stunning to me that we are still having these arguments. And in fact, you know, there's been such a backlash, I think, against women's rights and women's freedom that you know, we have really the patriarchy trying to take us, you know, back 50 or more years to before the 1960s, when we gained control over our reproduction, which allowed us to be in the workforce, which allowed us to choose when to have children, when and if to have children. So, you know, Mary Wollstonecraft said, again, in the late 18th century, I've seen enough of civilization run by men to know that they've ultimately and utterly failed us. Mm. And she really, you know, she really saw the ways in which the patriarchy failed women and continued to try to control women and keep them enslaved, keep them in servitude, and take away their choices and their rights to vote, to travel, to, you know, engage in the debates of the day. And so here we are again. And I think, you know, Wollstonecraft really can be an inspiration to a new generation, as she has been, you know, along the way since she died tragically in 1797. But every so often, every, you know, 50 years or so, she is rediscovered as kind of an icon, an avatar of feminism with really basic, her principles are so basic that we, you know, the women are equal to men. Why don't we have a society that recognizes that and gives women the same opportunities that men have? So I just, I love her. I'm crazy. I'm passionate about her. And I think she has so much to tell us today and to remind us of the importance of continuing the fight and never giving up.
And Kim, the Stallhouse case study, house number 22, is a story that a lot of people may not be familiar with. Can you give us a brief introduction?
Sure. So the main character of my book is a very famous house. It is a house that is a celebrity in its own right. Katie's case study house number 22, known as the Stall House, has been in more than a dozen movies, something like, you know, 1200 plus articles. And it's been, you know, world famous for many years. But little was known about the family that actually helped create it. And so the book is for modernist lovers of modernist architecture who want to know the intimate family story of this house. The Buck and Carlotta Stahl were basically newlyweds in 1954, and they saw this lot in the Hollywood Hills and envisioned their dream house on it. And people told them it could not be built, and they wanted basically to not waste any of the 270 degree view of Los Angeles that it provided. And a young architect named Pierre Koenig, who became one of the famous modernists, was the only one who would accept the challenge of trying to build it. And so the book really has kind of three acts. One is that the house is this impossible thing to build, this dream that everyone says, no, the lot's too small, that house is impossible, you can't do that. And then the second chapter is it becomes a home, and most people who know it just know it as an icon of architecture, but most people don't know the family story. And then it turns into this celebrity that starts appearing in movies and on The Simpsons, on the cover of magazines. And so it's a really fun story about this house.
Well, and all I had to do was look it up, and I was like, oh, I know the house.
Exactly.
I mean, once you see a picture, you know the house.
Right. The famous picture was taken in 1960 by Julie Shulman, and it is a black and white photo of this kind of glass box cantilevered over a cliff in Los Angeles with these two young women in white dresses sitting in it, just looking like they're living the perfect life in post-war America. And Time magazine actually named that one of the most, 100 most famous images of all time. So you've probably seen it, even if you don't know it by name.
And Emily, I want to wrap up with you. Your book, The Last Unkillable Thing, is a collection of poems. Can you just share with us a little bit about any of the themes?
Sure. The Last Unkillable Thing is largely about the aftermath of my father's sudden death. And not the narrative necessarily, but the kind of atmosphere of that death and grief. Anyone who's lost someone knows that doing so can change the way we see ourselves, see people around us, even see landscape. And that's largely what the book is about. And it's not lost on me too that this manuscript was read and accepted at the height of the pandemic. And I'm hoping that these themes will resonate with a lot of people. I also wanna say real quickly that, you know, there's are some pretty significant themes we're talking about here, but I also think this is going to be quite a fun event tomorrow. And so anyone who's thinking about coming, please do come for $1, come for $5, come for nothing, have a beer, have a piece of pizza. And there's going to be trivia and or prizes, and just come and enjoy yourselves, please.
Well, and what a wonderful way to, I think, celebrate and lift up local authors. So congrats to all three of you on your books and this relaunching a book party. But thank you again for your time today with us as well. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Jenna.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gemma.
And I want to let all of you know who we've been speaking with, novelist and screenwriter Samantha Silva, journalist Kim Cross, and award-winning poet Emily Patinos. We've been talking about The Cabin's belated book launch party. It will be tomorrow evening. That's Wednesday, July 27th. It will be at Lost Grove Brewing in Boise from 7 to 9 p.m. It is open, free to the public. You can make a donation, but yeah, open to everyone.